You're listening to The Takeaway with John Hockenberry and Adora Udoji.
So as Congress attempts to iron out the details of this $700 billion bailout for financial markets around the world, and as we've already spoken about, the world is watching what Congress does today. Secretary Paulson will be on Capitol Hill. Ben Bernanke is going to be on Capitol Hill. 877-8-MY-TAKE. If you can, with a straight face and in your most convincing voice, tell us, why you need $700 billion, that it's an emergency, that you'll take care of the money. We've been getting responses all week about the financial woes in America and around the world. And on the issue of bailout, listen to these two voices.
My name is Tricia Wu, calling from Joplin, Missouri. Sometimes it's necessary to bail out big companies to ensure the trickle-down doesn't affect the smaller American.
My name is Crystal Albright. I'm calling from Covington, Georgia. I have mounting bills. I can't turn around to the government and say, hey, I'm not going to pay my taxes. Yet we are always constantly bailing out these companies where their CEOs are making hundreds of thousands of dollars. Don't see where it's fair.
Hundreds of thousands of dollars. In his spectacular piece in the New York Times this morning, Peter Goodman of the New York Times calls Wall Street the home of the eight-figure salary, way above hundreds of thousands of dollars. And the piece is titled, Experts See a Need for Punitive Action in Bailout. Peter Goodman, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
And, what is that about? It seems as though Congress is looking for someone to take some pain if Congress is going to shell out all of this money. How's that debate taking place?
There's a serious pushback to this proposal, and it's on multiple fronts. I mean, one, there is a sense that this might not be the best way to go about trying to fix up the financial system, that we might need to give taxpayers something more than sort of the comfort that, you know, the whole world isn't falling down on them for their trouble and their dollars. We ought to maybe give the taxpayer some of the upside, some stock in the companies that are going to get the bailouts. So if they are, in fact, fixed, the government can sell the stock and make a profit. But there's also a larger sense that, that there's a sense of distrust that, here's this administration that has a record of saying we have an emergency confronting us, whether it's a national security issue or now a financial issue, and you have to act fast, Congress. You have to give us special powers right now so we can address this crisis. And, you know, people are looking at the war in Iraq. They're looking at the way the wiretapping bill and the debate over it has played out, and they're saying, I'm not so sure I want to give these guys more special authority.
You know, one of the people who we've been asking their impression of the bailout sent us an email that I think is pretty interesting. I mean, Hank Paulson used to be chairman at Goldman Sachs from 1994 to 2006. You know, he's worth $700 million all by himself. Is it a conflict of interest that so many Wall Street characters, and you could talk to about Robert Rubin in the Clinton administration as well, is it a conflict of interest that so many of these characters are actually designing these kinds of Treasury bailouts?
Well, there's certainly the perception of that. I mean, the Paulson bill, at least as it was first outlined over the weekend, essentially says, Congress, give me $700 billion. I'll use that money to buy up these toxic leftovers, these bad loans that are choking the financial system as I see fit. There won't be any oversight. I'll just spend that money as I feel I must to fix this crisis. And the first question is, well, what are you going to pay for this stuff that's sitting on the balance sheets? I mean, if you're going to pay market rate, how does that change anything? I mean, these banks could be unloading these bad loans today at whatever the market rate is. The problem is nobody really knows what the market rate is, and there isn't a market because nobody wants to touch this stuff. So you're going to have to pay some premium to get them to unload it. And who's going to decide what that premium is exactly? Now, there are plenty of people who say, well, the Treasury Secretary is acting honorably. We might have a disagreement over how best to structure this thing, but, you know, let's not question his integrity. But there are other people who say this is somebody who has spent, you know, most of his adult life on Wall Street, seeing the world through the lens of a large investment bank, and when it comes down to it, believes that what's best for Wall Street is what's best for Main Street. That may be true. I mean, we can have a debate about that, but this isn't necessarily the person who's best placed to address the interests of the taxpayer.
And Peter, according to your reporting, that skepticism really runs very deep. I mean, you certainly have lots of critics on both sides of the aisle in terms of political parties. And one interesting point that you make is there's this great quote from a former Federal Reserve Board economist who says, thank goodness, their initial reaction by the market is, thank goodness the cavalry is coming, but what exactly is the cavalry going to do? And that's really the heart of what you're saying, is that many people aren't sure whether or not Bernanke and Paulson are the ones to make the accurate judgment as to what exactly needs to be done.
Well, I mean, the same people who've been saying repeatedly this crisis is contained are now saying, give us $700 billion or, you know, the apocalypse happens tomorrow.
Hello. No. I mean, that's the interesting thing. And to have the cavalry come in, as Adora says in that quote, you know, doesn't really have a very nuanced view of the separation of powers. You know what I mean?
Well, I mean, that's somebody, Doug Elmendorf at Brookings, who's saying we do need to do something. And there are a lot of economists who think we do need to do something. There's a debate over, you know, what do we do? But, yeah, there is a sense of why are we doing this in such haste? If we're going to spend this sort of money, shouldn't we make sure that the taxpayers' interests are addressed, that we get some help for people whose homes are being foreclosed so we don't have the ugly situation where we're effectively bailing out executives, you know, who bought up beach houses and, you know, have filled up their bank accounts, with the public now picking up the tab for what are clearly some very reckless bets. So there's a sense of let's pause a little bit and sort of catch our breath and make sure we do this the right way if we're going to write a big check.
I mean, that's a serious issue because it is abundantly unclear what the Secretary of Treasury, what's his intention in terms of the taxpayers. I mean, it has not been articulated how we taxpayers either benefit or don't from the bailout or from what would happen if there wasn't this overhaul.
Well, I mean, there is a serious argument to be made, and one that a lot of economists buy, that, I mean, you can't have the financial system just collapse here, and it looked pretty scary before we started talking about bailouts. I mean, we had Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, which everybody now seems to know, you know, guarantee somewhere around $5 trillion worth of American mortgages potentially going down. We had AIG, which, you know, insures against corporate defaults potentially going down. And if the financial system doesn't work, how do we finance college? How do we finance houses and cars and, you know, a lot of other things that Americans care about?
You mentioned AIG, Peter. Did you realize you were a sponsor as a taxpayer of, you know, the Buffalo Bisons baseball team and Manchester United and also the New Jersey Symphony?
Congratulations.
Pretty cool, huh? I know. Well, I'm feeling pretty good today. You talked earlier about if there is an upside for the taxpayer in terms of getting something of value, it would involve taking equity stakes in certain institutions. Is there precedent for that, and how is that different from, say, nationalizing the banks, if that's what they did, say, in Chile?
Yeah, there is precedent. That's essentially what happened in Sweden in the early 90s, and that's an example that a lot of people now cite as a
socialist country, by the way.
That's right. Chrysler in the late 70s,
right.
The government got warrants and profited on the upside when the stock turned around. I mean, that's been done before.
And, you know, Republicans being at the head of this sort of thing, does
exactly.
that seem like an irony?
Exactly.
Well, I mean, there are concerns about that, too. I mean, a lot of economists are uncomfortable with the idea that the American government is all of a sudden going to own big chunks of the financial system. I mean, you know, somewhere between here and you know, serious ownership, we turn into the Chinese financial system. I mean, that's not something that anybody wants.
Peter, what's your best guesstimation as to how this valuation process is going to take place? How much are these quote-unquote toxic assets worth, and will anybody buy them?
Hey, if I knew that, I'd be too busy making a fortune to be talking to you guys.
Right, yeah.
I mean, nobody knows. The biggest problem here is that these assets, these are not like stocks and bonds where there's some exchange and you can look up at the board and say, well, a share of this costs X. These are very sophisticated, complicated investments created by taking millions of mortgages, pooling them together, chopping them into little pieces, different shaped and sized pieces. This is the way in which the financial system, you know, sold this stuff, bought this stuff, borrowed against it.
And so the pricing, we're writing the pricing just as much as we're writing the law. Quickly before we go, is there any precedent for holding salaries to some minimum or maximum?
I don't know that there's precedent. There's a lot of talk of that. It's unclear whether that's going to enter the mix. It's much more likely that when a deal is struck, we will have some sort of taxpayer equity share in bailed out companies.
But actually regulating executives' compensation is going to be a much more difficult issue. Peter Goodman, thank you very much for joining us. His terrific article is in the New York Times today. Experts see a need for punitive action in bailout. Peter, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, The New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.